This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Good morning to you, Roger.
And good morning to you, Orion, in that 100 and whatever degrees out
there. Well, it was 107 degrees when we landed at Sky Harbor Airport yesterday afternoon about 3 o'clock. And it did cool down to, I think, about 101 when we called it an evening at about 8 o'clock or so.
Well, that's nice, but I remember living out in Vegas. We had pretty much the same thing.
Right.
Very hot during the day, but it wasn't a heavy hot, if that makes sense.
And the thing that many of the locals have always told me, when that sun dips below the horizon in the evening, temperature drops about 10 degrees.
Yeah,
very pleasant.
Yeah.
So.
I'm worried, when you said you were back out there, I was worried about the dust storms and the monsoons.
Well, that's the one. We have tornadoes in the Midwest, hurricanes in the East, and yeah, we get what they call haboobs, which is a rather awesome sight when you see that dust cloud come rolling across the desert, picking up dust as it goes along and then dropping it in various places throughout the valley. And this is the season for them because it's the monsoon season, and they should be getting some rain, but right now, very dry for the ranchers and the hay producers in Arizona.
Wow. Well, we'll keep an eye on it for you, and we'll be back in about 21 minutes for you.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
With you then. Meanwhile, we say good morning, world, from Arizona, and good to have you with us again this morning. Jim Fazell standing by. He's ready to go, so we'll check in with Jim when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. It's time for Jim Fazell to join us here on the Saturday Morning Show. And Jim, our friend Greg Solier, our TV meteorologist, always says when you have a rainy spell and it quits raining, it dries up quickly. That's the case now.
Yeah, it's dry. In fact, the rain didn't just diminish, it quit. I know some folks have had some scattered rain, but, you know, we've only had 86 hundredths, or that's all we had in the whole month of July, after getting nearly 10 inches each month in May and June. So it dried up fast. Things are really dry. And Greg actually is forecasting for it to continue dry well into fall. With the warm weather, he says that we can expect the season to be extended into fall as it was late starting in spring, which is great for gardening. And actually, you know, it's been a really great gardening year except for no rain.
Right.
Plants have grown well. The temperatures have been moderate. We haven't had an awful lot of very hot weather and certainly no cool weather. Anyway, one thing we need to talk about very quickly is watering. I've been out looking at a lot of plant material. In fact, a lot of trees that are dying because of a lack of water. That's only part of the problem. A lot of it has to do, as we talked a couple of weeks ago, with the weather the last few years. But anyway, we can help them a little bit right now. We need to do some watering, and we need to prioritize because water is a scarce commodity, and there are some things we don't need to really water and things that we absolutely should be watering. One of the things we need to water are our big trees, our large trees. People don't think that trees can suffer in this kind of weather, but they certainly can. As we cruise around through our neighborhoods, we find even big old trees like oak trees and maple trees, leaves are beginning to hang on those, and especially in parkways where the roots may be a little bit cramped. We need to put down some water. Put a sprinkler out underneath the tree so that you cover the whole area underneath the branch spread of the tree, and put a coffee can out there or some narrow or straight-sided can. Measure 2 inches of water. Put down 2 inches of water. If it begins to run off before you have 2 inches, turn the sprinkler off, wait till it soaks in a bit, then turn it back on again until you have 2 inches in the measuring device. Then you know that tree's got plenty of water in the top 6-8 inches of soil for the time being. It's important to water our big trees. It's also important to water new plantings. These would be small trees. I know a lot of communities, when they plant small trees, put one of these gators. That's a the green bag that you put 20 gallons of water in, it slowly percolates out to water the tree. Very important, if you have a new tree and a gator on it, fill that gator once a week so that you get plenty of moisture down around those roots so you don't lose that tree. Bad enough if you've already lost one to lose another small one before it even starts. Third thing you need to water then would be your garden, vegetable garden, because we plant those to get the produce out of them. And if you don't water them, the amount of produce you get is going to be diminished. In fact, if it's as dry throughout your garden as it has been without any excess water, there are going to be a lot of things that just don't produce at all. And then finally, you can water your lawns. Lawns go dormant. They don't need more than about a quarter of an inch every month to keep them from dying. And even though they don't look so good, they're generally not going to die. In your lawn, again, put a coffee can out there and measure an inch. Put down an inch of water and then turn the sprinkler off until you see wilting again. And then you don't need to water again until the plants start to wilt. Now, let's talk about getting a new start in the garden. You know, we're halfway through summer. In fact, the meteorological midpoint was July 15th, and our solar midpoint is tomorrow, August 5th. So we still have half summer to go, but you don't want to diminish or to neglect doing things because the time goes fast. So it's time to start the garden. A lot of us didn't get everything planted because it was too wet too early or early. Some things never grew early because it was so cold and wet, and then some spots are vacated by now. Hopefully you've pulled out a lot of good produce. Or there are some places that just never were planted. Things that you can do right now, that you can plant right now that make a repeat performance in the fall would be beans or carrots or leaf lettuce. Beets or mustard. These things can be seeded directly in the garden. If you want to start things indoors so that you get a good start as you put them out, now is the time to do that as well. Start them indoors under lights just like you did in the spring. You'll have them ready to go out into the garden in about 4 to 6 weeks. Things that start well that can be grown as transplants and put out would be broccoli, cauliflower, lettuce, spinach. Some of the things that you started in containers in the spring can be put out. A little late for tomatoes and a little late for peppers because we are running up against the time on those, diminishing time, especially if it does turn cool in spite of what Greg says. You know, I tend to believe him, but still you never know for sure. Once you get the garden vacated, things out of the garden where they've already been pulled out or whatever, you remove those old plants and put them in a compost pile or bury them. Now, it just came to mind something. You need to map where things are growing right now because you forget too easily where stuff was. And if you want to do any rotating in your garden, put a map of just a hand-drawn map in your garden journal saying this is where the tomatoes were, this is where the cabbage was, and so forth, so that you can go back to that. Because once you get the plants out and new stuff in there, it's pretty hard to remember what was there at one time. Turn the soil over as you did in the spring. Prepare a seed bed, and you need to prepare it pretty well so it's fine if you're going to seed. And in fact, it needs to be prepared just about the same for transplants. If the soil is very dry, you might need to put down some moisture before you do planting. And if you've had problems with soil insects on the bean maggots or root maggots on onion crops, maybe you need to put down some permethrin soil insecticide as well. Sow the seed, cover the row with a board. You watch every day, morning and night, and when you see the seedlings beginning to come up underneath that board, then you have to remove the board or the additional seedlings will turn white and be etiolated and will not grow. So it's very important to, when you're going to cover it with a board to keep it moist, to go out and check them regularly to make sure that they're not up, and if they are, to get the board off. Out in hot weather, watering, as I mentioned before, is very important in your garden. Water on a rising temperature. This reduces the evaporation so that the plants dry off before dark as well. And harvest in the cool of the morning, as soon as the dew dries off, while the produce is still cool. It'll keep better when you bring it in. And it's probably a good idea to put things like lettuce and even sweet corn or whatever into the refrigerator so that it doesn't deteriorate. Insects have not been much of a problem this year because it's been so dry, but squash vine borers can be. Use 7 on them. Cabbage worms, if you see the little white butterflies flying around, protect your plants with Bacillus thuringiensis kerstaki. That's sold as under a whole bunch of trade names. White flies, not much you can do about them. You can try the insecticidal soap. It will kill the larval stage, doesn't kill the adults. But actually, the white flies, though they're annoying, don't do an awful lot of damage. Out in the lawn, keep mowing. The weeds grow even if the grass isn't growing. Last call for putting down imidacloprid or halofenazide grub control materials, because if you put them down much later than this, they're not going to be effective when the grubs begin to hatch. That's about enough information right now.
Man, you've used words I've never heard before.
Oh, well.
Some of the chemical names.
We'll repeat them until you remember them, Orion.
Okay.
But anyway, that's a hint. The thing to keep in mind right now is water. Plenty of water. Don't be afraid to put it on the trees especially.
All right, sir. We always appreciate your advice. Will we hear from you next week?
Plan to do that, yes.
Okay. Jim Fazell, he's our specialist in ornamental horticulture here on the Saturday Morning Show.
It's 20 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Saturday morning, and we're coming to you, as I mentioned, from Scottsdale, Arizona, WGN West, but it's probably going to feel even hotter in Chicago than in the desert because of the humidity today. We're looking at some pretty strong temperatures for Lollapalooza. Up in Manitoba, Canada, they have a special event going on today. Our good friend Harry Siemens, a farm broadcaster that we've stayed in touch with for years, checks in with Max Armstrong this morning to talk about...
Longtime farm broadcaster friend, farm commentator friend, Harry Siemens in Manitoba, Canada, has been about as busy as you could be in recent days getting ready for what they think will be a record-breaking attempt in Manitoba, Canada, out on a farm field this afternoon to have the most combines operating at one time. How many? Well, you might think 100 would be quite a few. Or even 200. Or, 300? They may exceed 300. To benefit Children's Camps International, I visited with Harry a couple of days ago about what this charity effort is all about.
We want to send a million kids to camp with this particular venture. And it's not like we don't have camps. And when I say we, it's a collective we, because I've been helping them ever since they got started on this with various promotions. But it's a fundraiser, and we're going to set the World Guinness Book of Records. We're going to put over 300 combines into the field. The last record was set a few years back in Saskatchewan at 243. So we want to go for 300. You know, this is a God thing, and I know for a fact that I've had the confidence that we're going to have over 300 combines all in the same 250-acre field, combining winter wheat that's been ready since 10 days ago. It's down. It's right. It's ready to go. And, we've got camps in underdeveloped countries. It started in India and went to Cambodia and different places. And $5, Max, $5 sends one child, underprivileged child, to a Bible camp somewhere in the world, and they get 1 year of follow-up counseling for those $5. So you can see what it is. And we've got sponsorships. There's $2,000 sponsorships on each combine. So if we get 300 combines times 2,000, that's $600,000 in Canadian funds, of course. And so I'm excited to be part of it, Max. And you know what? The organizers, they were really hoping you could be here, but you know what? This is good enough, too.
My apologies for not being able to be there, Harry. I sure wish I could, because it sounds like it will be quite a spectacle. Explain the charity itself, and is there a church connection?
It's an international, non-denominational organization called Children's Camps International, started by a good friend of mine, Ray Wheeler, right here in Winkler, Manitoba. I remember Ray in another life when he was a top ball player and I was an umpire, and we had our times on the ball field, but he's turned this whole thing around and has worked at it for years already, developing camps, and it started, as I said, with India. So it is very much church related, but it's non-denominational.
Are folks from the United States contributing to help make it possible as well?
You know, we had some farmers south of the border into North Dakota that wanted to come, but you know what we had to do? We had to make sure that we had some wheat left standing, because they're coming in here with their flex headers and they don't even own anything else. So yes, we're going to be straight combining. We're going to be, we've got already down in swaths, and we've got 3 914 international pull type combines coming as well.
My goodness, a little bit of vintage combining there. Now, will you have the combines all moving at one time? Is that part of the record?
That is the record. They have to be moving for at least, I think it's 5 minutes or 6 minutes that they have to be moving all at the same time down the field. We had 200 back in 2012, and of course you fellas carried that on your television show, and what a sight. But, it's such a big deal because, this is harvest time. We're in a harvest here in Manitoba. We're about 2 weeks early because it was drier and so forth. So guys are actually taking their combines from their field, coming here for the afternoon to be part of this. And that, that says it all in my opinion.
Harry Siemens, farm broadcaster, farm writer, farm commentator. He has the website SiemensSays.com. And you can watch that online this afternoon. When they try that at 2 o'clock Chicago time, if you go to the website, cciCamps.com, I'll repeat that in a moment, cciCamps.com, all together, cciCamps.com, you can watch that attempt. Orion, they swathed that wheat, probably about a week to 10 days ago. That's what they do in Canada before they combine it. They'll go through with a swather, so the wheat is lying down in a swath in the field, then the combine comes through and picks it right up. They don't use the same kind of combine routine we do in much of the United States. So they will have them all lined up. And as he pointed out, there's even a 914, three of them, I think he said. Those combines go back at least 50 years ago. International Harvester came out with that pull-type combine, I believe around 1968 or 69. Again, the website, if you want to check out that charity and if you want to watch that record-breaking attempt this afternoon, CCICamps.com, Orion.
All right, Max, thank you very much. Another exciting day in Manitoba, Canada. And thanks for getting our broadcaster friend Harry Siemens to come in and talk about it this morning. Something else I want to talk about that may be of interest to you, an event coming up later this month. The Bureau of Land Management will hold a wild horse and burro sale event in Kansas City, Kansas, August 24th and 25th at the Wyandotte County Fairgrounds. And there they will have 50 wild horses and burros that will be auctioned off. The event will take place from noon to 6 p.m. August 24th and 8 a.m. till noon on August 25th. Animals will be eligible for direct purchase to a good home. You can inquire with the BLM staff for more information. But the horses offered at the event are adult and yearling horses and burros that once roamed free on public lands in the West. The BLM periodically removes excess animals from the range in order to maintain healthy herds and to protect other rangeland resources. The adoption and sale program is essential, really, for achieving these important management goals. And since 1973, the BLM has placed more than 235,000 of these animals in improved homes across the country. Purchasers should provide adequate feed, care, and an enclosed area such as a corral, barn, or stall, and the facility may also be a pasture that is suitable for maintaining animals. So, if you want a wild horse or a burro, Kansas City, Kansas is the place to be August 24 and August 25. All right, we have more to talk about. We have markets and the trade situation to discuss. with Paul Giorgi of Allendale coming up. And we're going to check in Washington, D.C. to get a sense on what's happening with the aid program and the farm bill. All of that coming up here on the Saturday morning show. And we hope you'll stay with us for that, of course. And thank you very much, Roger. Good morning again to you as we continue our weekly visit here on the Saturday morning show, talking about the world's most basic industry, agriculture, producing food for nearly 8 billion people on the planet at the moment. So thank you for joining us. We're going to be talking markets with Paul Giorgi. We're going to Washington to get an update on where we stand as far as the farm bill is concerned and the aid program announced for farmers by President Trump a week or so ago. All of that coming up, but right now we say welcome to Samuelson Says, brought to you by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I am Orion, and the topic this morning, what's bugging Orion? So the question is, what's bugging Orion this week? Well, not much new, because the same old things we've been talking about longer than we should still bugging me. I received a couple of emails this week from parents of FFA 4-H members telling us at their county fair livestock show there were animal rights activists picking on those 4-H'ers and FFA members. Come on, people, stop that. These young people are making positive contributions to our way of life and to everything that we need in the line of food. They're working to use better procedures in raising their animals. And so don't go to a county fair or a state fair to pick on them. There are other young people that need a whole lot more picking on. Point number two that bugs me, people who don't use directional signals when they're making lane changes or turning corners. Is it that difficult to just flick the turn signal on or off? And then the last point I want to make is because of the season. That corn is pretty tall in the country, and at four-way country intersections, it makes for a lot of blind spots. If you're a farmer, it would be helpful if you just cut a little bit of it back from the intersection. But if you're traveling in the country, slow down at those country intersections when you can't see the oncoming track because of the cornfields. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. A presentation of Tribune Radio Networks, and we're delighted that you find time to join us here on Saturday morning, because a lot of activity in the world of agriculture right now, not only in the fields, but in Washington, D.C. We'll get to Washington in a few minutes, but get ready, because we're going to join Paul Giorgi of Allendale when we continue here on the Saturday morning show. Time to talk markets, and we talk markets with Paul Giorgi of Allendale, based in McHenry, Illinois. Frequent guest with us here on the program to talk about markets. And I don't know where we start, Paul, because one day the markets are down, trade wars. Next day, they're easing. Market goes up. What do we believe?
Well, that's exactly right. What do we believe? And it's an everyday affair. And it's also what is impacting the markets. We get farmers calling us, asking us, well, what's going on? Well, it's this today. It might be trade wars, as you said, today. It might be weather forecast changes from the morning forecast to the noon forecast. So, but it's really consolidating into a couple things, and that is the tariffs, how much news press gets it, how excited they get to trade, and the speculators in the trade. But in reality, the farmers have got, and for agricultural production, we've got a pretty good crop going this year.
And that's probably going to create an even bigger problem on how to market it. What are you telling farmers?
Well, right now, the farmer The situation is that we hear the farmers got a lot of old crop corn that still needs to be moved, and soybeans actually, and he's trying to figure out, do I sell it now? What do I do? Because I've got only a few more weeks and I've got a new crop coming in that I got to find a place to store. So the real issue is, what does he do? And that is, I mean, the question is, does he sell it now? Does he hold it? Does he move it to town and put it under a basis contract or a deferred pricing contract? Which I would say, don't do that. It's just not the best way to go. You're better off selling it cash and re-owning it on the board somehow, using options, using some type of low-risk strategy that you can maintain ownership in case this tariff war is settled. Which it could be at any moment. And if it is, I'm sure that would create a lot of excitement in the market and give us a nice price rally. So that's what we're all thinking about. That's what the farmer's thinking about as well. So I can't sell it because they might settle. And it's becoming a big problem for him that he needs to take action and do something.
Marketing by emotion doesn't work very well, does it?
It does not, and I've got a couple customers that I've worked with over the years, and he just told me the other day, he said, you know, we've been calm through this whole thing, he says, and we've got a philosophy and that working together, it says, whenever there's a, should we do something right quick because this happened, we always say, don't, let's just take our breath and catch our breath here and wait and make a decision afterwards. If you're not prepared going in, you certainly aren't going to make the right decision during a situation like that.
We have been spending a lot of time talking about corn and soybeans, but suddenly wheat has become a big performer in the marketplace. What's going on?
Wheat's been kind of the sleeper in the grains lately. And it's been a quiet rally. Nobody really talks about it. We always talk about the tariff and the problems with soybeans and corn, the big crop that we've got coming. But wheat is the real problem. There is the world production, especially in Europe. This drought that Germany and Eastern Europe is having, Russia, it is a big factor when it comes to production and exports, because Russia is looking at potential decline in exports of 25% to 30% of a year ago. So that opens the door for more U.S. markets. We've also got South America that is deciding should they plant wheat and how the wheat crop is going down there. Australia is another, has some problems with productions. Some parts of it will lose a lot of wheat. Other parts will have big crops in Australia. So the real question is what is their balance sheet going to look like? But all in all, we still have a large wheat supply in the world. But I think one of the factors that we really don't talk about is that China, not buying soybeans and protein, they're trying to change rations in their livestock diets. One of the next highest protein levels is in wheat. So they're making some adjustments there. That's helping some consumption of wheat. I think wheat is pretty exciting. Another thing that we have is the spring wheat in North Dakota and South Dakota area, Minnesota. The quality is not quite as good as what the trade was thinking earlier. We're seeing bushels per acre lower than what was anticipated. So I think that's wheat is the product also that has been sold by funds, and everybody has been selling wheat forever. We got some of that attitude changing, and that's helping support that price as well.
Let's come back to soybeans for a moment, because the situation with Brazil is going to be interesting. I've heard we may be exporting soybeans to Brazil in this thing.
Well, I think if China continues to buy all of Brazil's beans, they're going to need beans to feed their own livestock and the protein supply. So it might be a situation where we sell soybean meal there. We might sell soybeans to Brazil. I think that definitely is a possibility if this tariff continues to move on like it is right now with between the U.S. and China. But it's also going to be a price relationship. I mean, right now, Brazil beans are averaging anywhere from $40 to $50 a ton higher price than U.S. soybeans. And at some price relationship, the Chinese will need to come to the U.S. and buy beans because they're going to be cheaper, even with tariffs. So, and the Chinese can also, it's the tariff they're imposing on our beans, not us posing it on them as far as the soybeans go. So whenever they need food, they can make adjustments and they may come in and buy beans at some point in time because we will still be the store in the world where they can get good quality beans at any time.
Do you think the trade situation will cause Brazilian farmers to grow more beans next year?
Well, it sounds like it should. The problem that they're having is they've got transportation issues and they've got the economic issues within the country. So the cost of their production of soybeans has gone up. Moving soybeans from one location to another is really weight on the price of soybeans in Brazil. So the farmers aren't making as much money as you would think, and that's going to determine are they going to plant a lot more beans or not. And they've got some infrastructure issues that are holding back that expansion of soybeans.
We have the August crop report a few days away, and I've always looked at that as our first realistic report, because up until this time it's based on projections, but now we get planted acreage, we get weather, and we get the start of the crop. Are you looking for any surprises in that August crop report?
Well, I think the August crop report should give us higher yields. I think there's no question about that. The USDA is using a 174 yield for corn. I think that's probably going to increase. Our number is like 177. Other trade estimates have come in at 178 here just recently. A lot of the trade is saying, well, we could see way above record yields at 180, 183. So that is certainly a possibility. The weather is good, but I think this report is going to show probably some type of an increase on yield. Soybean yields the same way. We may not be at record yields for soybeans, but we certainly could be higher than what the USDA is using in their last report. So that will add to the bottom line on the balance sheet.
And finally, your reaction to the August crop report, is that one of the most important, or is it a month down the road that becomes more important?
The September one is probably going to be more important because we're going to get a much better look at what the crop is, what the quality of the crop is. Harvest will have begun and mature. Although August is going to be probably more important than in other years because we've got crop that is already mature, dented. I've got customers that tell me they've got corn that's fully dented already, which they think they could be harvesting within about 3 weeks. So we've got a crop that has matured a lot earlier, which is going to give the a little more importance to this August report, because the USDA does have people in the field looking at some plots and looking at corn. That makes the August report a little more advantageous this time. But we will have a lot of crop surveys in the meantime. Allendale's got their crop survey coming up here third week of August. So that's going to be giving us a lot of important information and a lot clearer picture of what the September report might be and what kind of crop is really going to be there.
Always a pleasure to have you along to share your expertise. Paul Georgie with Allendale, based in McHenry, Illinois.
We're at 10 minutes before 6 o'clock on what promises to be a pretty warm day across the Midwest here on this Saturday. A lot of activities going on in the field as well as outside the farmland country. But while there's a lot of talk about trade situations and activity in the fields of the U.S., there's a lot going on in Washington these days that will have an impact on agriculture. And we'll get to that visit when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. We are going to leave our Midwest studios this week and travel to the office of the American Farm Bureau Federation in Washington, D.C. And there we find Dale Moore, the Vice President of Public Affairs for American Farm Bureau. And Dale, as I look at the closing days of July, we've had trade talks, Europe and the United States, China and the United States. We've got a farm bill underway, and now we have an aid package. Let's talk about that first of all. Your reaction to it.
Well, Orion, I very much appreciate you giving me a chance to visit with you today and on behalf of all of the men and women that I work for across the country. And I can tell you that two things. One, we do appreciate that some recognition has been given to the impact that has occurred as a result of these tariff wars, tariff battles that are ongoing and having an impact on agriculture, particularly on our market prices. But we also keep mindful of the fact that while we appreciate this temporary assistance, we most look forward to the administration coming to grips with whatever negotiations, resolutions, fixes need to occur to get us back on track with our trading partners that are so critical to the agricultural economy.
Some people don't realize the importance of selling our agricultural products overseas, but it's tremendous, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. For some of our commodities, it can, you know, U.S. exports of agriculture crops can reach, you know, 70% for, you know, some commodities like cotton. For some of the wheat along the Pacific Northwest, it can be as high as 60%. Fruits and vegetables. Soybeans. Obviously, soybeans has kind of been front and center in terms of the impacts on this. And China is one of our major markets. And grain sorghum, and I know you have followed this closely earlier this year, actions related to China and the impacts there. We had grain sorghum producers lost a $900 million market, which is by far their largest export market. So, yes, these trade battles are having a real impact on farmers and ranchers and the prices that they're receiving.
Now, to take advantage of the aid package, what kind of information will farmers have to provide? Has that been outlined yet?
That's a very good question. And I know as we were visiting with USDA officials last week, they indicated that they are going to be getting information out here. They hope in the next week or two, certainly by the, say, third week or so of August. We don't know exactly what information they're going to be looking for, but a number of the programs are going to work through the Farm Service Agency offices out across the country. A number of the programs are also going to be operating out of the Agricultural Marketing Service. So right now what we don't know are the details of how sign-up is going to go, what information you as a farmer have to bring to the table. But we're certainly going to be monitoring that closely and getting that information out as soon as possible.
A quick question, because we're almost out of time, but they talked about food purchases. Have you heard what foods they'll be purchasing?
We haven't heard specifically what foods they're looking to purchase, but they talked about some general categories like dairy, beef, pork, specialty crops, fruits and vegetables, the orchard nuts, and so forth. So we would anticipate there's going to be a lot of analyzing going on as to where those needs are, but to be the kind of foods that could be easily purchased and moved into feeding programs, nutrition assistance programs, perhaps, you know, some working through ecumenical groups, those types, soup kitchens, etc. What we also know is they've made it clear they're going to be very careful not to interfere with normal marketing and purchases out there, so they've got a lot of work to do on that front as well. But again, we're looking forward to the tail end of August when the Federal Register notice is published so that we can get into some of these details, and certainly would look forward to visiting with you all more about that down the road.
Well, we look forward to it, Dale, and you've got your hands full. Thank you for joining us. Dale Moore, the Vice President of Public Affairs, American Farm Bureau Federation in Washington. We are a couple of minutes away from news time here on WGN Radio. In addition to Lollapalooza, a lot of other activity going on this weekend across the heart of the U.S. County fairs, state fairs getting underway, and farmers markets generally open early on Saturday. We got our delivery of Me Rise sweet corn from Gary Pack at WGN yesterday. So there is a lot going on. Go out to a county fair. Oh, our McHenry County Fair is on through tomorrow in Woodstock, Illinois, so far having a good season for their fair, and a lot of other fairs that are going on. So enjoy the summertime treats of the Midwest with county, state fairs, and farmers markets. Well, we ended the marketplace in the soybean trade firm yesterday, but anxiety over the China trade war still continues, and live cattle futures rose sharply yesterday, lifted by better demand from beef packers who were bidding more aggressively to buy steers in cash markets, and technical buying also supported cattle futures. Live hog futures ended the week mostly higher. So that's our time, and we always appreciate your company. We appreciate the work of Bob Ferguson, our engineer who puts everything together, whether we're on the West Coast or the East Coast, and thanks to all of you for listening.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.